Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. A warm welcome to Afternoons with me, Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening today. I am so happy that you have joined me, and I can keep you company for the next couple hours, whatever you're doing. If you're still working and you can listen to the radio, how cool is that? And if you're getting things ready for this evening and you have the radio on, how cool is that? And if you already climbed in your car and you're driving home and you're listening, I just love it. Today is December 4th. And this year only has 27 days left. I can't believe it. We have a great show today. Rob Bluey is going to be with us. He is from the Daily Signal. DailySignal.com is the website. He's the editor-in-chief of. I'm a big fan of Rob. He gives me my weekly Washington update. I try to dedicate roughly 22 minutes of news per week on this show about what's going on in Washington. And then Arlene Pelican will be with me. She is a speaker and an author. She's written several books. She's going to talk about 8 strategies for raising kids who love God, respect authority, and value what's right. And we are kind of in that season of reinforcing that we want to raise kids who are givers, not takers. And we want to try to avoid and lessen the gimme, gimme spirit of the season. That's going to be her topic. And then in the second hour, Pastor Sean Winters from Calvary Church is going to be with me, and he's going to talk about making wise decisions. We're going to reflect on 1 Corinthians 10 about making wise decisions. And then Governor Mike Huckabee is going to be with me. He's written a book called Rare, Medium, or Well Done, Make the Most of Your Life. And it's not every day you get a chance to talk to a former governor, but today is that day. And you know I love scripture on this show. I want lots and lots and lots and lots of it. So if you have not called and left me a verse, I would encourage you to do so. 877-933-2484. And that's this line. You just get right into the voicemail. And you say, hey, I want to leave a verse for Bill's show. And you can leave your name or not, but just name the verse and then read it. And I'll put it on the air because I want tons and tons of different voices reading God's word because I love it. And here's a listener that I think remained anonymous, but she's reading from Psalm 128.
Psalms 128, live in love. May the blessings of God be yours all the days of your life. May the peace and the love of God live always in your heart.
From all of us at Faith Radio, Merry Christmas, and thanks for your consistent and ongoing support of this ministry. Your gifts have allowed us to continue sharing the good news of the gospel through relevant Bible preaching, family-focused teaching, and interactive talk programming, all designed to make the connection between faith and life every day. As you head into this busy holiday season, know that you are much appreciated, and we're honored to have you partner with us. We'll celebrate the partnership during our winter share starting December 11th. Thanks again. Thank you for standing with us in prayer. This week, the Faith Radio prayer team is praying that God will be glorified in this Christmas season, that we'll see beyond the gifts, trees, and traditions, and have our eyes and hearts tuned to Him. May we experience the depth of joy and peace that Jesus has to offer as we anticipate the celebration of His birth. We'd love to have you pray with us every week and invite you to do so by signing up for the Faith Radio prayer team at myfaithradio.com/prayer.
Welcome to the show. I have on our studio line Rob Bluey, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com to check out the website. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you. All the news right now is on George H.W. Bush, the passing of the 41st president. And, of course, it says that everyone has a story to tell about George Bush. Do you want me to start with my George Bush story?
I would love to hear your George Bush story.
Well, here's mine. I never met him. There you go.
Well, I never did either.
Okay.
But even so many people, my colleague, Ginny Montalbano, a Daily Signal reporter, interviewed her father yesterday for our podcast, Bill. And she and her dad had an interaction with the former president at the Houston Rodeo. And that's one of the things that really seems, setting aside politics and perhaps areas where President Bush may have disagreed with the Democrats or even Republicans on issues, he was genuinely a good man and somebody who had a heart and a commitment to helping others and really trying to see the good in people. And so at a time when Washington is so divided and our politics can be polarizing, I think it's nice to take a pause. We will do that tomorrow with the National Day of Mourning. Of course, Washington, D.C. will be a quiet place because the government is closed, the Heritage Foundation is closed, and I think it's a time for us to reflect not only on his life, but the contributions that so many from his family have made and the sacrifices and public service they've given us.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about his legacy. I know he was a man of great character. Was he well-liked among the conservatives?
At times, yes, and other times, probably not. I mean, you'll remember the famous "Read my lips." Mm-hmm. You know, I won't raise taxes.
Right.
He subsequently raised taxes. Many felt that that was, a bridge too far and a promise that he never really recovered from. Of course, he faced some challengers in the 1992 primary when he was running for re-election. He also faced a third-party challenge from Ross Perot. He ended up losing that race to Bill Clinton. But then there were other times when he was celebrated and continues to have an impact to this day. I can think of no better example than Clarence Thomas. He was the Supreme Court choice of President Bush. He's still serving to this day on the Supreme Court and probably will serve many more years. And you think about a legacy like that, and the good that somebody like Clarence Thomas has brought to our country, and you're really thankful.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about David Souter, just to balance things out a little bit.
That's right. David Souter was his other choice. So just like President Trump in his first term, well, of course, President Bush only did serve one term, but he had two Supreme Court picks. And that is one of the legacies. David Souter was an obscure judge from New England who went on not to really uphold any conservative values on the Supreme Court, but in fact became a member of the liberal bloc of the court. When Souter retired a few years back during President Obama's tenure, President Obama replaced him with an even more stridently liberal justice on the Supreme Court. So in that case, yes, definitely not somebody that conservatives wanted to cheer about. I think it also, though, was a wake-up call and gave conservatives an opportunity to really say, now remember this when President Bush's son, George W., was in the White House and he picked Harriet Myers for the seat that eventually she withdrew from and went to Sam Alito. And they pointed out the same lessons they learned from David Souter and said, we can't pick somebody for a seat who doesn't have a record because we just don't know how they will rule as a judge. And so I think that the Souter appointment was something that conservatives long opposed. But there were, like I say, good things, bad things. We have Operation Desert Storm, President Bush's strong support for the military. And then you had some domestic issues where perhaps he went a little bit beyond where conservatives wanted him to go.
Mm-hmm. And I know he's been thoughtfully referred to with the words character, honor, and integrity, which is, I think, appropriate for President Bush. And then also, not to mention, he was married to his wife for 73 years. Pretty spectacular.
That's right. So, yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I think one of the things that really stands out is his ability to, despite the fact that Bill Clinton defeated him in 1992, the two became friends. They worked together to help others who were in need at times of national tragedies. So those were examples that I think reflect very positively about what our leaders can do when they set aside their differences and work toward the betterment of our society. And of course, upholding that great example, I'm so glad you brought up the example of his marriage, because at a time when we know the benefits of marriage, children are better off when a mom and dad stay together, when they can work out their differences. Of course, married couples, do have challenges in their relationship, But I think somebody who was so loving to Barbara Bush, and she is this grandmotherly figure that so many people could look up to, just great role models in that respect as well.
Mm-hmm. How would George H.W. Bush fare today in the political arena? Would he be the Republican nominee for president, and would he be elected today, do you think?
Probably not.
Okay.
In fact, I don't think that were it not for Ronald Reagan selecting him as his vice president, I don't know that George H.W. Bush would have ever received the Republican nomination. I mean, let's face it, there were, a number of other people. By the time Reagan was done, the country was doing so well, it was often referred to as Reagan's third term. So I don't know that Bush himself would have been able to get to that point, despite the impressive resume that he had. But he himself was quite upfront about himself being an establishment Republican, and the Republican Party is in a different place today, much more populist, not certainly a party of people who come from the type of background of George H.W. Bush. I think that's just a sign of the times, but I also think it's a reflection of what Donald Trump has done to the Republican Party. And you'll quite remember that one of Donald Trump's competitors in the 2016 race was Jeb Bush, the former president's son. And it was that quite contentious relationship between Trump and the Bush family that led some to speculate about just how things might happen this week. And I have to say, I'm quite impressed with the way President Trump is receiving the Bush family and his approach toward this. I'm glad that he'll be participating in the funeral tomorrow, and hopefully they can set aside some of those past differences they've had.
Mm-hmm. Rob, do you think that Jeb Bush is a chip off the old block?
You know, Jeb Bush is actually probably in some respects more conservative than his brother George W. Bush, which, might surprise some of your listeners. But when he was governor of Florida, he did some fairly conservative things that I think people should celebrate, one of them being his commitment to education and school choice. You know, that's one of those issues that even you saw that illustrated in this most recent election in 2018, where the Republican nominee, Ron DeSantis, was campaigning on school choice and those issues. And the opponent, Andrew Gillum, the Democrat, was campaigning against them and wanted to end some of the programs that the parents had been able to take advantage of. It's thanks to Jeb Bush that we were even having some of those conversations. And so what you saw in the Florida race this year was that African Americans voted, 18% of African Americans voted for the Republican candidate. It was enough of a margin that the Republican in that narrow election was able to squeak out a win. So in many cases, those low-income families have Jeb Bush to thank, and he was advancing some conservative principles at the same time.
Wow. Great analysis, Rob. Rob Bluey is my guest, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. DailySignal.com is where you go check that out. We'll take a little break and be right back with Rob in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I'm talking to Rob Bluey, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com to check it out. And we're talking about George H.W. Bush, our 41st president. And tomorrow in Washington, D.C. is a day of mourning. So, Rob, you'll have the day off from work, and the government.
The Daily Signal will be working. The Daily Signal will still be hard at work. As you know, Bill, the news never stops.
That's true. And one of the distinguishing things about President George H.W. Bush is he was the last president to serve in combat.
That's right. Yeah, and given the way things are going in this country, who knows if I'm sure someday in the future we'll have another president who has military service. But as we've seen with President Clinton and then George W. Bush and Barack Obama and now Donald Trump, certainly quite different approach in terms of how Americans go about electing their presidents. You had Ronald Reagan, you had obviously Eisenhower, Carter was had some military involvement. So it was something that I think that generation of Americans, those who came of age during World War II, it was just a different experience than what typically we have today. And you have fewer and fewer Americans who are active in the military. It's becoming increasingly common that some families don't even know anybody who has been in the military, when in the past, you know, I had three of my four grandparents had some part in the military. So I think it's something that we should celebrate, particularly at a time when we still have global threats around the world that our country faces. Despite the relative peace full time that we live in, we can't forget that the military plays an important role, and people like George H.W. Bush certainly exemplified that.
Yeah. I want to encourage my listeners to head to dailysignal.com, and you'll be amused at a picture of George H.W. Bush in the Oval Office at his desk. And as I just look at the artifacts, Robin, I see that telephone on his desk, which is the telephone that the leader of the free world uses. You wouldn't put that phone in your house today. It's so outdated and clunky. And you go, that's technology. That's 1991 technology.
That's right. Exactly. It doesn't seem like it was all that long ago, but yes.
And the
globe. It just goes to show how quickly things have changed.
And the globe in the background. How relevant is that globe nowadays?
Right. Yeah. Well, particularly from that period of time, because obviously the world map has changed quite a bit with the fall of the Soviet Union and all of those countries in Eastern Europe, having their freedom again.
Got to cross out USSR. Got to do that.
That's right. That's right. I think about my kids, and as they're starting to learn, world history and studying notable events and to grow up during that time. I think one of the first presidential campaigns I really remember as a child was probably 1988. I would have just been about, I would have been 9 years old at the time. And I have, not great memories of it, but I certainly remember the Michael Dukakis in the tank and George H.W. Bush, and then, the Saddam Hussein, which followed in his first term. And so definitely a lot of changes have taken place in our society since then. And I think that looking back at some of those photos definitely brings back some memories, not only for me, but I'm sure for your listeners as well.
Mm-hmm. They're great. It's a great photo. All right, Rob, I want to ask you about what's going on in Congress. What are they pushing for between now and the start of the new year and the new Congress that's coming in?
That's right. Well, so we have the lame duck Congress. They have to take care of a few things before the year is out, one of them being funding the government. Now, the deadline was supposed to be this Friday, but due to the funeral, they've agreed to postpone that. So they're going to pass a short-term continuing resolution. Basically,
oh, they agreed on something?
Well, they have. Basically, it'll just kick the can down the road for two more weeks. So now it'll be the 21st. It's rare that you have that type of agreement. But,
That's what I mean. They agreed on something.
But Bill, it's kind of sad that it took the death of a former president to get them to do this. The border wall continues to be a big fight when it comes to funding. The president has said, I want funding for the wall. And the Democrats have said that they're not going to give it to him. I suspect that 4 days before Christmas, you're not going to see a government shutdown. So the likelihood is probably decreased. And one of the sides is either going to have to fold or compromise, and there will be some resolution to this. I think the other two big things that your listeners should be aware of, the farm bill has expired. They have to take some action on that, whether they just extend it for another year as they did last year, or whether they try to pass a new bill is a question. The conservative groups are largely opposed, if not unanimously opposed, to the farm bill, in part because it adds more subsidies at a time when we really don't have the money to do that, nor should we be rewarding this kind of cronyism where Washington is picking winners and losers, particularly in the agriculture industry. And it also eliminates work requirements that have become so valuable for food stamp recipients and trying to get people off of food stamps and back to work. And the last issue, Bill, is criminal justice reform, as we've talked about on the show before. Mm-hmm. There's an opportunity here for Republicans and Democrats again to come together and pass something. The president is supportive of it, but you have a couple of Republicans holding out in the Senate, and that might torpedo the whole thing.
Yeah. I have a question, Rob, because I was looking at the caravan and the migrants. Shouldn't they want to just go right to Brownsville, Texas? Because that would be 1,500 miles closer than walking to California. If they're trying
That's
to get
right.
into the United States.
You know, when we had our reporter in Mexico City, that was a big question, which route they would take. They ultimately ended up getting in buses and other cars to make the trek a little bit easier from Mexico City. But you're absolutely correct that it would seem that Texas is a closer – geographically it is closer. So I don't know what it is about that particular border stop that they decided to do. Maybe they felt that California would be more lenient than Texas, but ultimately, the president has still decided to deploy the military to help along the border. We're not sure how long the military is now going to be stationed there because there are so many people coming that it takes a lot of time to process these people who are claiming asylum.
Mm-hmm. And then the UN climate summit, I'm sure that's going to be always a point of contention with President Trump in the White House, fair to say?
It is. So we had a report the government recently released, and it, showed pretty dire circumstances when it comes to our climate. The president has not only disavowed his own government's, his own administration's report, but I think that there have been some good questions raised about it. They did take some of the most extreme circumstances and data to draw their conclusions. And then also, I think that the thing that we should remember and your listeners should know about, which is often not reported, the United States is actually taking some pretty significant steps to reduce pollution and to help clean up the environment. Many of the problems that we have on a global scale are not happening as a result of the United States. They're happening from some of the other participants that were at the G20. And there was this tweet that went around, suggesting that the United States was the only country of all of these industrialized countries not to sign on to this climate pact. And yet, when you look at the data, we're the ones having the most success at reducing pollution. So, it just doesn't jive. And I think that it's an indication that we believe the free market can sometimes have a better effect on this than having some government regulation trying to mandate it.
Mm-hmm. Rob, always a pleasure. I don't know if you've seen the video yet of Bob Dole paying his respects to President Bush. It's online. If you thought the image of Sully, his dog, waiting by his casket was a tearjerker, wait till you see this one.
Yes, well, I will go check it out now. Bill, thank you so much for having me on the show.
You bet, Rob. I will talk to you soon. Rob Louie's been my guest, editor-in-chief of The Daily Signal. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. It is 31 minutes after the hour. My guest on the studio line is Arlene Pelicane. She's a speaker and author of many books, and she lives in San Diego with her husband, James, and their three kids. And she's written a book called Parents Rising, 8 Strategies for Raising Kids Who Love God, Respect Authority, and Value What's Right. Arlene, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was just talking to Rebecca, and we were commenting on the fact that Bert Lair, the Cowardly Lion from The Wizard of Oz, today is the anniversary of his death. And do your kids, have they seen Wizard of Oz?
They have seen Wizard of Oz. But I have to say, I know growing up for me, it was every year. The year that CBS put it on TV, we're like, we're watching The Wizard of Oz, so my kids have not nearly seen it as many times as I've seen it. I think they've only seen it once. And well, I think they could barely, like, tell you the story. So that may be we might need to revisit that.
Yeah, well, for us, it was an event because you knew, yeah, like, 3 weeks out that it was going to be aired in the afternoon on, like, Easter Sunday. And you're going, this is going to be awesome.
It's going to be amazing.
Things have changed just a little bit, wouldn't you say?
Yes,
yeah.
They
so,
have.
Yeah, Arlene, how do we raise kids who are going to be givers and just not takers?
Yeah. This is a season, right, where they're doing their Christmas wish list. I remember when my kids were much younger, we would go through the store, and they'd be like, I want that. I want that. I want that.
Yeah.
I want that. You know, now they're kind of older, so they don't do that as much. But it is this idea of how can we raise givers and not takers. And I think part of it is insisting on magic words like please and thank you, even if your child is 18, which you still would say, could you please say thank you, or could you ask a different way? Like us simply insisting on that, I think it helps children as they grow up to realize I need to have good manners and I need to ask with a please and a thank you. Because the fact is when your children go out into society, like when my kids run free in Costco, you know, and they get samples and they say to the person, thank you, you should see the person's face light up. I mean, they've just given my children free food. And the person will look at them like, wow, you're so well-mannered. You said thank you. Because what do most people do? They grab the sample and take off. And they don't say thank you. And so I think insisting on pleases and thank yous, whether they're a toddler or a teenager, that's a great place to start.
Mm-hmm. Some people call it free samples at Costco. I call it dinner.
That's right. Just
head over there. But it is so fascinating to see kids take samples and run and don't say thank you. I mean, simple things, yeah, like you say, the basics. So how do we, yeah, try to lessen the gimme spirit? Because, yeah, you know, kids have more exposure, Arlene, to advertisements now, and right, they kind of know what they want more than ever.
Yeah. And I think it's fine to have a child have a list, you know, these are the things I'd really want. But with that, have that child also be thinking of the gifts they're going to give, right? So even if they're really young children, that you can talk about, well, what do you want to give grandma and grandpa this year? What do you want to give your sister? You know, you can make a coupon. You can, you know, we've got all these little coupons from years and years ago, like massage coupon, wash the dishes coupon, you know, whatever. But teach your kids, like, what are you going to give at Christmas?
Right.
Not only what do you want at Christmas, but within your immediate family, you know, and grandma and grandpa, what do you want to give them? And then also even looking for a service project, and sometimes that can be through your church. Our church is doing something with Angel Tree and with Prison Fellowship, and so we're collecting gifts, and then our family signed up to deliver gifts, and, you know, we've never done that. So that's a new thing and a new way that we can show, hey, we want to be givers, people who give things, not just people who take things. So look for service projects and look for gifts that your kids will even save up their own money. You know, my kids are now 9, 12, and 14. And the 12 and 14-year-old, more of the 12, the girl, she's a little more generous. My 14-year-old boy's a little more miserly, but she will actually save her money and start buying gifts for people. And I think that's really cool.
That's really sweet. Now, let me get to some of the tougher questions, Arlene. When a child wants, must have, like a video game or even a phone, and you're not sure that's a good idea, how do you deal with that?
Mm-hmm. I would take the holiday out of it. So sometimes we'll think, it's Christmas. Let's make it so magical for them, and let's get them the newest iPhone because that's what they want. You know, if it wasn't Christmas, is your child ready for this cell phone? Is your child ready for this video game? So don't make it about the holiday. Make it more about their readiness to receive whatever item you give. And I would just err on the side of caution and waiting, because it's rare that you hear someone say, oh, I'm so glad I gave my 11-year-old a phone. Like, she was so ready for that. Like, you just don't hear that. And so for phones, I would push back on that as much as possible. And then also for games, because here's the deal. We'll give the game, and we'll make our child so happy for that day. And then for the next 365 days, we're like, please turn off your game. Please turn off your game. Why are you up at 2:00 in the morning playing your game? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so you've just got to think long term. You just have to think past the excitement of unwrapping this under the tree. Is my child ready for this? Can my child handle this? Is this game appropriate for my child? Is it too violent? And don't, you know, give into that, oh, everyone except me has this. You know, so I love to tell parents, it is okay to say, well, you are my child and you're not going to have it. And if you look hard enough, I'm sure there's one other child in the universe who doesn't have this either.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just not a good enough excuse.
You know, once you get into college or your middle upper 20s, you start bragging about what your parents didn't let you have when you were a kid.
Exactly.
But at the time, you were miserable. But for, you know, for some reason, it's like, yeah, my parents didn't let me have a phone. And so I ended up studying some more. I ended up being class valedictorian and got a free scholarship to college. What about you?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm really good at Fortnite. It's like, okay, fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. So that is a difficult issue, because phones for kids, it becomes part of how they socialize. It becomes how they stay included in what's going on in their world. I mean, I used to think of a phone was a luxury, not a necessity. Now kids go, it's a necessity.
Yeah, and I think that is still up to the parent to say, you know, if it is a necessity or not. I think in many matters, it's still not a necessity. And in fact, I went to Screenagers, which is this documentary that they show at different high schools and events. So I went and I took my daughter, my 12-year-old daughter, and one of the questions that they asked the panel of students, including two seniors that were like peer mediators, and they asked, can you survive high school without a phone? And both of them, good-looking kids, bright, articulate, you know, leaders, they said, you know, you really can. It's not a big deal. And they said, as long as you have access to a computer, you can get to all your homework and you can get in group chats, you'll be fine. And then if you think you're getting a phone to be popular, it really doesn't work that way. So it was interesting to hear these seniors in high school even tell, you know, an auditorium of kids and parents, you don't have to have a phone. And so I just encourage parents, if you do give that phone, don't just give it like, oh, here you go. But give it with a contract, give it with, this is what we expect, you know, we'll be collecting the phone at night. If we see that it's, you know, disrupting your sleep or your mood changes or your homework isn't getting done, then we will take away the phone for whatever and just let them know. And I think that will help versus giving it carte blanche. Here you go. Have fun.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some activities that the families can do this Christmas that is no screens, screen-free activities.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that they're not all around the table looking at their phones.
Right, right.
Looking at funny Christmas cat videos or something.
Right.
You know, there's so much to be done just even around your own neighborhood, around your local mall, or around your local, you know, 10 minutes away or an hour away drive, things to see. So just if you're able to, take a walk around the neighborhood with your kids. And you can look at lights. You guys can vote on, like, which house is the best, which house is the worst. You know, you can just have fun with that and just get outdoors and enjoy that as much as possible. If there are little train rides, if you have kids, you know, you can take them on a train ride or a carousel ride. You can give them bells to ring if they're little and tell them how, you know, Jesus came and it was this big announcement and it was so exciting. Now, that could get irritating. So you might want to just do that for 2 seconds and then put that away. You can have a birthday party for Jesus, and, you know, you can invite. It's actually a neat witnessing opportunity if you want to invite some of your kids' friends and, you know, more for younger kids. But you invite them and say, we're going to have a birthday party for Jesus at our house. Do you want to come and have a birthday cake and tell the story of his birth? Like, that would be a really fun activity and a fun, different Christmas kind of thing to do that could really serve as a witnessing thing. And then, you know, with your younger kids and your larger kids, you can, again, think of service opportunities, like look for a local nursing home. We have a veterans home very close by that my son Ethan, he's 14, he plays the piano for them. And so we'll go one of these December weekends, it's the weekend before Christmas, and the girls will draw pictures for them, and Ethan will play the piano for them and do Christmas songs. So look for activities you can do as a family that involve everyone and that make a memory, and try to make it, you know, something giving if you're able to do that. And then the last thing I'll say is not that many people go around caroling anymore. At least they don't in San Diego where I live. And so we've started this little tradition that we have a class Christmas party when our kids are in elementary school, and we'll invite the class over and we'll have everyone bring cookies, so it doesn't involve a lot of work on my part. And so we'll do a cookie potluck, and then we'll tell the Christmas story. We will teach them Christmas carols, like Joy to the World, and then we walk around the neighborhood singing Christmas carols. And what's really amazing is, one, a lot of these kids have never sung these carols. They only know Frosty the Snowman and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. They don't know the other Christmas carols. So that's a cool thing, to be able to teach them that. And then, two, your neighbors it's so odd to open the door and see, like, you know, 20 kids singing to you. It's kind of heartwarming. And that's another family activity that you could bring back. And I know people who play instruments, trombones and flutes and saxophones, and they go out and they go caroling. It's pretty cool. So you can think of, you know, what are some things, ways we could be inventive with Christmas and just do it around our own house, and it doesn't have to cost much at all.
I'm still stuck at cookie potluck. That's where I got a little derailed. I've never heard that concept before, but that's spectacular, Arlene.
Yeah.
The whole idea of a cookie.
Avoid the whole dinner thing.
Yeah.
Having to feed everyone. You have it a little after dinner. You know, we started at 6:30, and we say, bring cookies, and we'll make hot chocolate, and we'll have a cookie party.
Yeah. And kids do have a lot of fun when they have a little novel activity, something they haven't done before, and it's been organized and... You've got the cookie potluck, and kids are learning songs, and they're having fun singing them. And I want to hang out. Your house sounds like it's a fun house if you're a kid to hang out at.
Yeah, it's true. We play silly games and have lots of Nerf guns.
Oh, that's very fun. We're going to take a break in about a minute, but I want to talk about one of the strategies in your book, Parents Rising, 8 Strategies for Raising Kids Who Love God, Respect Authority, and Value What's Right. How, in your book, marriage really takes a front seat, which is great. So how can you make sure you're sending some of that wonderful Christmas love to your spouse in this season?
Exactly. It's like all about the kids. And they're like, okay, honey, and I love you too. And I think if you even can schedule a little date night or a date lunch or something that's just the two of you, I know it's a very busy season, but when you think about it, okay, if I have time for my office party, for my church party, my volunteers, I do all this stuff with the kids, certainly the husband and wife can carve out, even if it's a coffee date, but just something that's just the two of them over the Christmas season. And so whether that's dinner out, meeting for lunch at work, having coffee together, going for early morning breakfast, but just something that is special where a husband and wife can walk hand in hand all by themselves and have a little Christmas magic just for them. I think that's special because usually all our memories are around our kids, which is beautiful, but it's really good to make a memory just with your spouse.
Mm-hmm. And your point's well taken. It's really easy at Christmas to always make it about the kids. And you're missing out a big part of the joy of it as well, aren't you?
Yeah, we're the big kids,
we're the ones
that stay around. The little kids all leave.
Right.
But your husband or wife, they're still going to be there, so be nice to them this Christmas.
Right. Arlene Pelican is my guest. Her website is Arlene, A-R-L-E-N-E, Pelican, P-E-L-L-I-C-A-N-E.com. We'll take a short break and be back more with Arlene in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. Arlene Pelican is my guest. She's a speaker and author and has written several books. The one we're chatting about today is called Parents Rising, 8 Strategies for Raising Kids Who Love God, Respect Authority, and Value What's Right. In the book, Arlene, you do talk about how good food is served on the table. Of course, in December, we can have a lot of treats. So how do we stay kind of focused on not making this month a diet disaster?
It is true, isn't it? And believe me, I am speaking as a fellow traveler who is eating a lot of cookies and chocolate. And you know what part of it is? It's just so our culture that we don't just have like a birthday. The whole month we think, oh, it's my birthday. And the same thing with Christmas. It's like, okay, Christmas is one day, but the whole month of December is a reason to get together and party. So, you know, when you go out to your parties, I think it would help for us as adults and also for our kids, you know, just before your kids eat all the sweets and all that, maybe you have you need a serving of vegetables before you have that treat, or you need to have a serving of fruit, or you need, you know, so just monitor what your kids are eating when you're out as much as possible so that they get some good stuff in first, and then they wash it down with all the treats instead of having a whole dinner of all treats. So that would be one way to do it. Another way would be, and this is hard, is not buying a whole lot of junk food for your house in the month of December. And the truth is, whenever you go out, you're going to have plenty of opportunities to have food, junk food, whether it's a friend's small group Christmas party or an office Christmas party or a classroom thing or somebody's birthday, you know, all these things. And so when your kids come home, if they see like, wow, we have cookies every day on the countertop, you know, because we're buying them because they're delicious. So a lot of it is just stopping ourselves in the store. Now, if you're like me, you've already bought your things because they were on sale and they only come out once a year and they're amazing. And so once you've finished that favorite pumpkin thing, favorite chocolate peppermint thing, which I have done, once you do that, like you have the remorse and then you say to yourself, I will not go out and buy more of that. So you're catching yourself in the shopping cart because that's whatever you bring home, you're going to eat it. And so I think if we can show more moderation from this point forward in our shopping carts, because the truth is we overeat, our kids overeat, we all do this. And so maybe we can, from this point forward, say, okay, I'm not going to buy anything more for us to snack on that's super unhealthy. And then when we go out, we will eat what's good first, and then we'll have our treats.
Mm-hmm. So, Arlene, how does quiet time, devotions, and prayer time with the family change a little bit in the month of December? Should you be focusing that prayer time and the Bible reading a little differently in December?
I think it is a beautiful opportunity to do it, and every family just needs to have what they think is doable, right? Because a lot of times we'll think, oh, we're going to do this amazing thing for December, and then nothing happens, and we're like, oh, you know, we blew it. So whether it is something in the morning that you read at breakfast, whether it's, you know, Advent candles that people do, whether it is a Jesse tree, I know there's like a special Christmas tree with ornaments that some people like to do. So whatever it is, you can find what tradition works well for you. For our family, I have found that it's simplest with, I have a devotional that I read with the girls at breakfast, and my kids go to school at different times, but I'm able to do this with the girls. So that's something that we do is in December. It's just more focused on the birth of Jesus. And so you have those readings from the scriptures that are about the birth of Christ, not super lengthy. It doesn't have to be really lengthy with kids, but just something that's there that's a little extra special.
Mm-hmm. Arlene, is there a little diagnostic? I think there is a little quiz you can take in your book for just trying to figure out how healthy your home is. Could you talk about that a little bit?
I can, because part of it is just being honest, you know, about where we are. So a couple of questions, you can kind of answer them in your mind. My children could have a screen-free, no Wi-Fi weekend without any problems. Woohoo! If it's yes, you're doing good.
Mm-hmm.
My children show honor to me as a parent, yes or no. I enforce house rules and boundaries. My kids know I cannot be swayed, yes or no. I pray with my kids every day, yes or no. We eat at least 5 screen-free meals per week together as a family. So these are, you know, a couple ways that you can start diagnosing, you know, hey, how are we doing? Do my kids respect me? Do they know the boundaries? Are these boundaries enforced, or do they know they can just push these boundaries wherever they want? You know, are they seeing prayer in the home so that in that sense, Christmas isn't so different? You know, it's like not like, oh, we went to church and did the special stuff at Christmas, but then the rest of the year we weren't so much into Jesus. You know, so you want it to be that, hey, this is part of our daily rhythm, that we thank God for things. We praise him for things. We praise him for who he is. When we get dropped off to school, we say a quick prayer for the kids, you know, things like that, mm-hmm. so that they hear out loud that you are praying for the kids. And December is a wonderful way to start if you haven't been doing that, to say, you know what, I'm going to pray for my kids when I drop them off at school. I'm going to pray for my kids at bedtime. This is a great month to start that habit if you're not doing it yet.
Mm-hmm. Arlene, then how do you encourage your kids and give them the training, might not be the word, but it might be the word, mm-hmm. as they face opposition about the holidays and the sacredness of Christmas that we love as believers, mm-hmm. that finds a lot of hostility in secular world, whether it be they can't call it the Christmas season, they have to call it the snowflake season or the winter land season. And I'm going, these kids just want to burst out with Merry Christmas, but they can't, or they're told that it's not good.
Mm-hmm. We are very much like, you know what, kids, if you get in trouble for saying Merry Christmas, that's cool. Like, we really don't mind that.
Yeah.
And so it is this idea of, kids, we are here in this world to be respectful. You know, so we're not trying to cause an uproar or anything, but we are here to wish people a Merry Christmas and use any opportunity to talk about Jesus. So we are more like, tell people Merry Christmas. This is a neat opportunity to invite them to church. There was a focus on the family broadcast a while ago about a teacher in public school and how he got in so much trouble for talking about Christmas, because he's thinking, well, there's Christmas and we talk about Kwanzaa and we talk about Hanukkah, so why can't we talk about Christmas, you know? And so I had the kids listen to that, and it's just this point of, let's just use our reason and not emotion, but just use the reason of, okay, you know, the big joke in our family was when my child Ethan was in kindergarten here in Southern California, he came home knowing how to spell the word Kwanzaa. We're like, Kwanzaa? He was in kindergarten. But he said, in my class, we didn't talk about Christmas once, you know. And so just being able to recognize the disparity between other holidays and Christian holidays and being able to talk about that to your kids so they recognize it. And I think it gives them, it makes them wiser to understand that, hey, this thing is rigged against us, but we are the rebellion, you know, and we will rise. So I think it's okay. It's okay for your kids to say Merry Christmas and to know, you know what? It might not be socially popular, but it is the truth, and we'll say it with a big smile on our face.
Amen. So, Arlene, and then the most important thing I think, and you would probably concur, is we spell love with the word time. And whether it's your kids or grandkids, investing and spending as much time as you can with them is you'll never get that opportunity back.
That's true. And, you know, and you can see people over the holiday season, Christmas season, who have lost loved ones, you know, whether a child or a parent. And you can imagine, oh, would they give anything, you know, to just spend that one more day with their loved one. And I think if we can once in a while have that perspective so that when we're with our children, we're with our families, we're all like, oh, they're such a pain. You know, they're so loud or they're so this or they're so that. But to instead realize, you know what, the time is ticking and you never know what next year will hold, and enjoy the time you have with your kids. And particularly if you have kids in your home and they're growing up, they grow so fast, you know, so really enjoy the time that you spend. Put away your screens, because then you're in the same room, but you're not really present with each other. You're just interacting with the screen and not with each other. So put the phones away during Christmas get-togethers and really spend quality time. Look at your children in the eyes and make sure they do that back to you, and really have that face-to-face time with your kids this Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Arlene, have you and your husband dreamed together as a family and included the kids? Do you guys have like a family dream of things that you know, want to do in your life?
Yeah, that's neat. Yeah, we do. We have a few. One that came to pass, one of my dreams was to take the kids to Indonesia, which is where my family was born. And my kids had never been there. And so we wanted to do that and also meet our Compassion International child. So we did that in March. So that was kind of like a big deal for our family to go overseas and such. So that was on the dream list. And then we have different kids that we sponsor in El Salvador. So we put that on the dream list that we would like to visit them someday. And then we live only 15 minutes from the Tijuana border here in San Diego. So we're very close. So we dreamt for a while, James had talked about, I want to do some kind of orphanage ministry because all of our kids speak Spanish, even though we're Chinese and white, you know, Chinese and white equals Spanish, you know, equals Mexican. And so we just started doing that, going once a month to an orphanage to teach English. So that way our kids can practice their Spanish, and it's been really, really amazing. And then we dream about, you know, going to Switzerland and eating cheese in Italy and things like that. And so there are definitely things that we dream about. A lot of them involve travel. For my husband, they always involve skiing. And for me, they look more like Disneyland.
Mm-hmm. When you do the orphanage in Tijuana, do you do the cookie potluck?
No, no food.
Okay. That's really inspiring. I know my listeners will just love that. They will love having heard that. So thank you so much, Arlene. And I don't know if I'll get a chance to talk to you again before now on Christmas, but so Merry Christmas, and maybe we'll get a chance to get another time together before the holidays. If not,
first
of the year. Thanks, Arlene. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Bill. Yep. Thank you.
Arlene Pelican has been my guest. ArlenePelican.com is her website. You can go read more about her and her books. We'll take a short break, and then we've got hour two just ahead. Pastor Sean Winters will be with us, and Governor Mike Huckabee. That's all ahead in the next hour. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.